Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do-it-yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Did you want to fuck Samantha when you were watching her growing up?
I really liked seeing all their tits.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? But today we're asking, who's the bee in apartment Laura Marie? We've got Laura from Sexy Unique Podcast fame here to dish on that bee of bisex. And she gives an answer for what made her bi with one of my favorite gateways that I've heard in my 100 almost episodes of this gay ass pod. If you missed my thirst trap combo announcement posts from this past week, the tickets are officially on sale for the LA and New York shows next month. LA is June 15th, and the lineup is just kind of stupid how hot it is. It's Ryan O'Connell, it's Johnny Sibley, it's Big Dipper, it's Poonam Patel, and other amazing people. Those tickets are live, of course, in the description, in my bio, for the Eventbrite link there. The New York show is the end of the month, June 29th, with pod favorites Grossi Pelosi, Emma Willman, Kevin Zach, the unbelievable Dragon Sisters, which, fun fact, I haven't said publicly, but I did lose my virginity to the boyfriend of one of those sisters. So my little claim to fame. In this week's episode, we talk, of course, about Scandoval. I mean, Sexy Unique Podcast is one of the front runners of podcasts dishing on the Tom Ariana breakup. But listen, that's only a part of the episode. So if you're not a Scandoval girl, which I would assume most of you are, but I know there's some of us out there that don't speak the Vanderpump lang, then just fast forward to the like 35 minute mark and we get into Laura's unbelievable reason for what made her be. I hope you enjoy this episode. Get your tickets for the New York show, the LA show. And if you want to watch the live show from last month, you can go to patreon.com/gayasspodcast to watch that with the ad-free episodes and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy this pod. It's a really great and free way to support the gay ass universe. I love ya. How long has it been since I recorded on your podcast? It feels like it was 25 years, but I think it was maybe a calendar year.
It was maybe a calendar year, but yeah, I agree. It feels like another lifetime. I think it was almost a year ago, probably exactly.
Yeah,
it was season 9 of Vanderpump Rules. It was a while, mere weeks before I gave up on that season altogether and never even finished recapping.
Can you believe how far things have come since that terrible season?
I honestly can't. And I was even saying to Carrie today, like, I feel like I let myself down by losing hope, but they really beat it out of me after 7, 8, and 9. A girl can only take so much.
At that point, you were just protecting your heart. And I think you were with the rest of us, which was had given up, but now we have been redeemed. And I guess this is what Bravo fans would call, what's it called when Jesus is supposed to come back?
The resurrection.
Thank you. I always forget. This has been the resurrection of Vanderpump Rules, and you on Sexy Unique Podcast have been doing the Lord's work, and for good reason. Your podcast has become on a celebrity level, and it's only It's only right that you come on this podcast. Carrie was on like I think the first year of the pod, and I'm just thrilled that we have now had the final reunion of Gay Ass Sexy Unique Podcast.
I know. It's been a full circle moment. So I'm feeling blessed to be here.
And I am too. So let's just make this clear. I do want to ask you thoughts about Scandoval. I want to ask about what's about to occur with the first reunion we'll be seeing in mere days. But before we do that, I like to hold my guests to task by bringing up some of their past. And there's a tweet of yours that I would like for you to explain, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'm down with this.
I'm going to set the stage. It's okay. January, the year is of our Lord, 2022.
Okay.
You tweeted a singular sentence that carried weight, had some reactions, and I want to see if you feel the same. Laura, you said, to know me is to accept that I'd gladly fuck Bezos. Laura, tell me now, do you still feel this way? And if you do, care to defend?
I do still feel this way. I was actually talking glowingly about Bezos earlier today on the Sup bonus episode with Carrie. My stance hasn't changed. Would still gladly fuck him. Would come in as a third with him and Lauren if they would have me. He's my favorite billionaire of all the billionaires. I feel like everyone should choose one to align themselves with when the eventual billionaire takeover happens.
Sure.
And we become enslaved to them. So sure. I just want to call it now and be like, Bezos, I'm here for you.
So when you're the slave of Bezos, is that meaning concubine vibes? You want to be used in all holes?
I'm feeling like yes. Like I'm feeling like it's like a Mad Max Fury Road kind of situation where you're hooked up to like breast pumping machines or something equally as sinister but also sexy.
So then were you deciding between other billionaires or was Bezos always the one? Because for me, I'm trying to decide who mine is and I'm having a tough time pulling up any that aren't the fucking troll that is Elon Musk.
I know. It's like, okay, your options are pretty limited. Like you have Bill Gates, who's a no for me.
Okay.
You have Rupert Murdoch, who I guess like he does have some swag left in him, but like the dynasty, the kingdom he has built is not so much aligned, though I do love, doesn't he own Page Six or the New York Post? I do love that. But he owns Fox News and like that's a little bit much for me. And he's just older, so who knows how long he's going to be around.
We also have, did we talk about Warren Buffett?
Warren Buffett, again, kind of old, though I would like for him to educate me on the stock market since I still don't exactly know how it works.
Well, now you're really making me understand your viewpoint because I'm looking at these images too, and Jeff Bezos, when it comes to the physicality of these evil people, he's got a bald head, which I've gone on record many times to say I really would love to go, that's me.
I love it. Yeah.
You know, kind of tapping my well, various parts onto the glistening forehead. But then when I look at Bill Gates, he's giving gentle Jewish neighbor that I kind of want to understand what the smell is underneath the tidy whites. But again, I keep going back to Jeff Bezos. What about Mark Zuckerberg? How do you think he is in the bet?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. Oh, I don't even know. I don't even know if
evil eyes.
Yeah, he doesn't give me like fuck energy at all.
And obviously Steve Jobs is no longer with, but if he were alive, I think he'd be my one.
I know, he'd be a front runner for sure.
What's the gay Apple head Tim Cook?
Is he gay?
He's gay.
How did I not know this?
He is openly gay. He's the first CEO of any Fortune 500 company who is openly gay. And he is, I think, a billionaire. I've chosen my top bottom billionaire. It's Tim Cook.
Wow. This is a big win for the gays.
I think it is,
too. This is a huge deal. Do the gays know that he's gay?
That's a great question. I'd like the listeners to sound off in the comments. Did you know? I think the gays know.
I've never heard a gay man talk about Tim Cook being gay, and I feel like I would have heard that by now. But I also have a problem where I have like the worst gaydar. I never know if a man's gay or straight ever.
Well, it's getting like, even harder now. By the way, Matt and I were at brunch this weekend in Silver Lake of all places, and I turned to Matt and I was like, the amount of gorgeous straight men who I would do unthinkable things to, they are presenting gay, but I can tell they're straight based on the way that they are avoiding my glance, and that I don't think is okay.
Yeah. That's a hate crime.
And there's more grooming happening, which I'm on one side, I'm proud of and thankful for the straight men who have kind of realized that taking care of your body and your visuals will make you feel better inside. But on the other side of it, I'm thinking, why is there a mid-fade? Mm-hmm. You're trying to confuse me and my under area.
Yeah. And I think I process all of them as like, oh, that guy is like clearly gay. Mm-hmm. So, but maybe this is good for me and I can be like less intimidated by straight men now because they're like presenting as gay. So then I think like it's friendly fire.
100%. And for you, it's best of both worlds, I would say.
Yeah. And maybe a lot of them are bi, actually, now. I feel like straight men have discovered bisexuality and are, like, owning it. They're realizing that, like, oh, I could actually just fuck everyone.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm going to do.
And that's why I think when sometimes I get self-conscious about the stereotype of gay men as being, like, sexual monsters, I then take a zoomed out take on the cam and I say, actually, I am a person who is celebrating my sexualité and also like the natural feelings I feel and rebelling against the straight idea of you're only allowed to be attracted to one person and you're only allowed to be like a quote unquote like respectful fucker. I think the men who are realizing they can be bi are identifying with the fact that they are just as horny as gay men and they don't need to be as slut-shamey of themselves if they happen to want to kiss a man, feel a beard, or suck a D, really.
Yeah. No, I think so. And I think I would even venture to say that straight men are far more sexually sinister than gay men on the whole.
I agree.
No pun intended.
Wow, she's good. Can you tell me what it's been like as a host of a podcast that does deal a lot with Vanderpump Rules? What has it been like going through this season of catching lightning in a bottle? And then did you feel any pressure to live up to it, or was it all really organic?
It's felt for the most part organic because, and I have to say, like, Carrie O'Donnell being my co-host has made it so fun, and I can't think of like a more fun person to talk about a show with, really. Like, I do, there is part of me that sometimes misses having a rotating guest, but like, he's so funny and we can create these ongoing jokes that continue throughout the season, so I love to do that with him. And like, it's been a show that's given us so much material to work with this season, so it's been spectacular. I feel like just the demand for content is so insatiable from the audience that sometimes I feel bad because I want to like I would love to drop like 10 emergency episodes and blah blah blah, but I can't just like podcast round the clock about Vanderpump Rules. It's not healthy for anyone to think about them 24/7.
Well, you especially, because it's not just like you press record and then it's on the in the world. It's like there's a little bit more of work that you have to like emotionally wrap around this.
Yeah, and like I want to get my point of view all settled, and like I want to be able to have fun, and like I like it's good also to make people wait a little bit and get some anticipation going. Like
100%.
So I find myself having to tell myself that it's okay, that I'm not like letting anyone down by literally just releasing the podcast that I normally release on the same schedule.
Truly. And also speaking to like the insatiability, if you will, of the listeners and of the Bravo watchers, like Matt will literally be listening to Sexy Unique Podcast, and then I'll hear him go to Danny Pellegrino, and then I'll hear him go to Bitch Sesh, and it's like we're talking about the same episode, but like you want the different viewpoints. And so like it is so just golden era vibes of Vanderpump that I realized when I was asking you to be on this episode, as this podcast has organically grown and moved, it hasn't been too much of focusing in on pop culture specifics. We of course talk about the things that are happening in the zeitgeist and what are speaking to us, but I feel like you mentioned on your most recent episode, like straight fathers know about the breakup of Tom and Ariana. Like this feels like a moment that I've been invested in Vanderpump probably since the first season, if not one of the first. And so I just feel like to have you on is a big, gorgeous get. And I'm so thrilled. So that with that
Thank
being
you.
Said, I want to go into a couple questions about how we're feeling. First of all, you and Carrie have discussed how you think Tom Schwartz is just as bad as Tom Sandoval. In fact, Carrie's mother says that Schwartz is, quote, the axis of all things evil. Is that something that you agree with?
I agree with it. And I almost think that he, in many ways, is worse than Sandoval. Because
Pray tell.
is so spineless and is very concerned with people liking him. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the most important thing to him. And I think that he hides his true feelings often. And then you see it come out in this like really like bad way.
Oh God, yeah. And the thing is that I will fully admit that I gave him too much credit in previous seasons. Like, I remember when he married Katie and he was crying at the altar, and I was like, God, you know what? He is a sensitive, sweet, straight man who just wants the best for himself and his family. And then I realized that actually, by him never standing up for A, his wife, B, for the right thing, then C, he is worse, because like his reaction to saying that I'm so worried about the restaurant and then going to his brothers with the Gators in Florida, it's like not even putting in the same breath how Ariana is one of your longest friends and how she's even feeling. It's like, oh, he is showing his true colors, and it's sad because he could be a good guy, but I think he's not.
I think he's not, and I think he likes to put himself around the same type of like kind of toxic person.
Oh yeah.
Because he can look better by default. And like, not, I think I fell into, in the early podcasting days and my early days of watching the show in the early seasons, I fell into the trap of being like, wow, Katie Maloney is like the devil.
Yeah.
And like, she's so awful. And like, I feel for this man that he has to be with her, which is just like kind of reflective of just the misogynistic culture that we live in. But then also it's like, oh no, that's what Schwartz wants you to think.
Yeah.
You've played right into his hands because he knows what's going to set her off. He will never have her back, never once defends her, and then keeps like gassing her up when he knows that she's like on one, and purposefully like sets her up to fail. Yeah. So that then he looks like great by default.
And then even post-divorce, what really fucking pisses me off is even after their divorce, he will speak under his breath, you know, I don't even want to be around you anymore. It's like, wait a minute, you guys are literally not together anymore. And so now you don't have to A, say that, but also like be a cruel asshole. It's over.
Yeah, and if you feel like that, then why the fuck are you telling this person that you also want to be friends with her?
Yeah.
Like, I don't say that about my friends.
No.
I don't say that about anyone that I like. And so you don't like this person. You should not be friends with them. And it would be totally okay for him to be like, I don't want to be in this relationship. I don't feel like being friends with you. And which it seems like is how he really feels.
Yeah.
But is too afraid of being perceived as like a bad guy to say it. So then he acts fake and says this shit under his breath, which in my opinion is far worse.
I agree. It's at least like you said, when people lie, at least be upfront with everything you're lying about and not just like a tiny part. Whereas he's like pretending that he's a nice person by only showing his niceness and like in ways, and then his meanness is coming out in tiny ways. No, I think actually you're kind of cruel. And this pains me to say because I met him outside of Tom Tom like 2 years ago, and he unfortunately was incredibly nice to us. But the way he's shown himself,
yeah, he's so nice when you meet him in person.
Yeah.
Like, and he does have that like kind of like foppish, boyish mm-hmm. energy and that smile, and he's tall, but I think he also knows that. And
yeah.
he really gets on my nerves too, because he's just failed upwards. And that strikes such a nerve in me to see like mediocre straight white men in particular just get rewarded for literally nothing.
Well, the fact that you said that he's tall and the foppish thing, I do think his height, my theory is when I met him, he seemed taller than I thought he would be. And that to me even mm-hmm. played into like, oh, wow, he's even more special because he's tall, ? I don't know what is behind that, but it's there. I also yeah. want to like co-sign on what you said about how all those men sort of protected each other, the Jacks, the Tom, and the Tom of it all. And that almost triggers me because I sometimes witness either people I know or even some looser friends of mine, not really super close friends, but I feel like if you know people in life who are always complaining or miserable, but they're always around the same people that clearly aren't helping in any way to change that, it really frustrates me. And then when, of course, my biggest trigger is a straight man being toxic. And so to see mm-hmm. Jax and the Toms cover for each other in their asshole ways really fucks with my head. And the fact that people are now saying that Jax should maybe come back on, I feel like I'm still burned from his past behavior. But do you think that, I mean, because I haven't watched Jax and Brittany's recap thing because of, again, said trauma. So I have yeah. you been? Like, how? What's your Jax stance?
I was really anti, and then my friend Sierra was like, you should watch their recap thing. Like, I just want to show you a little bit of it because it actually is kind of entertaining. And we watched a bit of it. And then I was finding myself laughing. And I think I'm open to them coming back. I'm really open to, and this is controversial, but I think it would work well for the show. I'm open to kind of everyone coming back.
Including Stassi and Kristen.
I mean, Stassi is someone that I always am like, I actively don't miss her. I never really liked her, particularly on the show. Like, I understand why people did, but she just was never my favorite person.
Yeah.
So I could take or leave her. But if you're going to have all the others back, and like, if she would, I'd be like, okay, fine, get back in here.
I'm shocked by the Kristen response, how people are so like, my fucking marital spouse is like, soaking the couch over Kristen, and I'm like, and then he's like putting it on the internet, on his Twitter, and etc. And I obviously support his truth because I'm supposed to, but I think a lot of people
agree
with him.
It's a shocking twist.
It is a shocking twist,
and I feel kind of vindicated because I was like, I thought when they got fired, I thought that that was a very like knee-jerk reaction and really putting a band-aid on a much larger like systemic issue, obviously. And more like, it felt just very much like Bravo trying to make themselves look good yeah. instead of actually trying to fix a problem. And I believe in that people should bear the consequences of their actions 100%. But I was always of the mind of like, No. Don't fire them. You need to keep them on the show. You need to hire Faith to come back. Mm. And then we can like actively deal with this yeah. situation and make them like responsible for their choices and stuff, while also like giving this other person, who, lest we forget, gave us one of the best seasons of Vanderpump Rules, season 6, and then was promptly kind of kicked to the curb or pushed aside. And I always thought, I have always been a big Faith fan. So I was like, let's get her back in the mix in a real way and like see how this plays out. I think that would be interesting. And then it just kind of like affirms to me that mindset of what Bravo must have been going through like in 2020, that they would so willingly bring Kristen back into the mix. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, that firing really kind of meant nothing at the end of the day.
Yeah, how many
and
seasons?
Right when the door is
open. It's like,
open.
What, 2 seasons for Kristen to be brought back?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm like, I knew that it was like that. So, and it's like, anyone really buying and drinking the Kool-Aid that it's like, wow, they're really like putting their foot down and standing up for what's right. Yeah. It's like, no, babe, they're standing up for their bottom line.
Honey,
like,
Luann did blackface dressed up for Halloween and she has not had a lick of criticism from Bravo. Like, that's another thing that has been really getting me lately is the whiplash of the New York of it all, because I've been so burned, I feel, by how they dealt with the last season of Roni. Speaking of their horrible reaction to the racism of Ramona, definitely of Luann, and then the fact that they made like Ebony carry all of the burden of educating these people, and then canceling the show, and then trying to bring it back, and then canceling that, and then now making it a girls' trip. I like, and then putting out the trailer for the new one with a bunch of influencers, and of course some people who are going to be great. I hope. I'm not. I actually don't want to shit on the new New York. I just feel like, emotionally guarded by it all.
Same. I mean, I don't envy the position that any of these decision makers are yeah. in, because it's like, it's a tough situation to be in. But at the same time, like, I've never thought that reality television was anything other than kind of like trashy entertainment. Yeah. Like, the most highbrow, lowbrow sure. entertainment possible. That to me has always made the best TV. So like, I'm confused by people who act like it's anything other than what it is, which is like, you're going to watch some really problematic people. You're going to watch some people that aren't problematic, but are just funny. You're going to like watch cheaters. You're going to watch like the human like race be as human and like disgusting and as great as they are. Yeah. And like, that's reality television in a nutshell.
But I do think the last episode of this season's Vanderpump, if Emmys can be awarded, I know people have been calling for it, like the editors and the cast members and the producers, like that was synergy of excellence. And that is what we like to call in the business storytelling. Yes, it is the highest of the low brow, but that was so high low that it almost transcended genre, I feel.
It did. They got off their asses and fucking worked. Yeah. Every single person from top to bottom. And like, when Vanderpump is just like on fire, it really is like the team effort of everyone involved making that show, making it what it is.
Yes.
And that's why, as like a longtime fan, I simply cannot accept anything less than the excellence I know they can achieve.
Well,
I hold them to a very high standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I love them so much.
So then if we look to what is going to happen after we're at this peak of all peaks, what do you think is going to happen, first of all, at the reunion? Like, what are you hoping to see? It's obviously going to be explosively edited and hopefully all three parts,
and then aren't there like supplemental interviews that Andy did one-on-one with, like, I read somewhere that he did an interview with Ariana, with Tom, and with Raquel. So I hope that that's true and I'm ready to watch all of that.
And there's going to be like uncensored versions right the next day.
Yeah, I want to know all the details of how everything transpired. I want to know what was going through people's heads. I want to know, like, I want a play-by-play of all the secrets and all the rationalizations. And I just really want to know, like, what Raquel was thinking, yeah. I think.
Do you think people
still don't understand?
People have theories that she is maybe on some sort of spectrum, or do you think there is something to that, or is it trying to excuse her?
I mean, I could see that. I feel like that's also like that's very in the zeitgeist right now. Like these, like especially I've just noticed with women having like late in life like autism diagnoses, it's very much trending on TikTok. And I mean, I'm not mad at it. I have a brother who has autism, and like I get it, but it's just interesting to see it come into like we're talking about it like we are now. I could see that. I also just think like maybe this person truly does not know who she is and is overwhelmed by everything that's happened. And like also I think she clearly has some sort of deep trauma that's get whatever patterns, like whatever negative patterns you get into as an adult, it's kind of like you're always negotiating with like that core wound in your own way. And so I feel like this is that. And I don't, it's like I'm torn because I want like Tom and Raquel to stay on the show. Like I don't think that they should be fired. I don't think that people should be fired for like having sex consensually with other people, even if it is like cheating on someone. Like,
well, that's why the show is so good, is because their behavior is so depraved.
Yeah, like that's the secret ingredient, is like
our bad
they all
people.
Disrespect, yeah, and like hurt each other on like a visceral level. But I think it's the kiss of death for a reality show when people refuse to film with other people.
Ugh.
And like, when has that ever worked out for the best?
Well, and I get Ariana she's having boundaries because she is a queen who is taking care of herself, but it does put her and us in a very difficult predicament, which is if you don't film with the villains, what do we lose?
It's kind of like this is the job that you signed up for in a way, not to be like so harsh about it, but I'm like, this is the job. Like, and now the job has some perks, but the job also has some downsides. And when this is your job, like this is going to be one of the downsides.
Well, she's at quite a crossroads because her career right now, and I do mean her life as a career, like Dancing with the Stars hopefully will happen. And she's, I feel like some other announcements have been made about her. Like she, there is a world that she decides she doesn't need the show, but yeah. I don't know.
And I can see that too.
Yeah.
Like I feel like she is ascending and her star is on the rise, and like the performance in the finale was incredible.
Incredible.
And it was also kind of like the first time we've ever seen her completely like raw and honest. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like she's spent a lot of time on the show kind of holding back or being like just not fully participating.
Yeah.
And then she was basically put in a situation where she had to fully participate, and it was great. I was like, I've been waiting for this person, and I'm so glad that she's like out of this relationship. I think it's going to set her free. I mean, I could see a world in which she decides to leave the show and become an actress or like do something else entirely. Yeah. And I think that now's the time that it would totally work for her.
But then while this happens, this is what I find so interesting is like she, to her credit, is staying true to herself. She did so well on Watch What Happens Live with Andy right after the... I mean, she's just killing it. But then on the other side, Tom Sandoval is like doubling down on his bad band. And that is a decision that I cannot understand. Of course, all of his decisions have been horrible. But like, there was a clip recently posted where the vocals are just terrible. I mean, doesn't he have someone tell him that?
I mean, he's got to stay busy somehow. Yeah. And I don't... No, I mean, I'm also like, is this the best financial decision to make? Like, aren't you, you're paying, that project can't be making money for anyone.
From
except
someone who has just put up his first live shows for the podcast that have sold really great, but I've invested a fair amount in. If my shows are not making me money yet, the amount that he has invested into that fucking band, he must be losing so much cash.
Yeah. As someone that's also done live shows and kind of gets a sense of the financial bottom line, and I'm like, we do live shows and split it between two people, and we're lucky to break even. But like, you're talking about bringing an entire band with you to a show and you're paying them. Like, there's no way.
No.
I don't understand it either. I'm worried about his financial future.
Oh yeah. Well,
but this is what I want to see. I want to see it like, I want to see it play out. I'm compelled. And
yeah, you're right, to see like the BTS of his like financial downfall.
Yeah. And like, how's he going to make this restaurant work? And what's he going to do with that house? And like, how, like what's going to happen with the band? And like, how is he going to heal his reputation? I think like one of the best things about reality TV is that you can be a villain one season and a hero the next.
Yeah.
And that is never, aside from like like killing someone, I would say, like committing cold-blooded murder, that's like a narrative that's always available to you.
So,
like,
okay, this is a great question then. So let's say they all come back. Tom Schwartz aside, who is going to be the first cast member to go back to supporting Tom Sandoval? I forgive you. I'm here for you. I'll be friends with you again.
Oh, that's a really good question. Who would go back to supporting Sandoval?
I think I might have an unpopular guess based on your podcast.
Say who?
You say she's the heart of the show. And she is, I think.
She popped into my head first, but I didn't want to say it.
I think Sheena might be one of the first to go back.
Because she does kind of like give people a lot of benefit of the doubt. Like,
she does.
Even when she's burned, she's always open to like trying again.
Because I think she's been burned so many times. That's like her survival mechanism. Is like, if I hold a grudge, every time I've been burned, I will be on an island with my Australian husband who finally cut off the ponytail. And looks hot, by the way.
I know, he's so hot. Ugh, it's unreal.
It is unreal. I did not expect this. There's been a lot of surprises, and that's one of the top.
Yeah, I'm proud of her. Like, it seems like they're really obsessed with each other.
Yeah.
And like, I'm glad that she got like her kind of gorilla juice head, as they would call a man like him on Jersey Shore.
Cheers to Sheena.
Kling. I know. And I was like, She was the first person I thought of. But then I was like, no, she's so loyal to Ariana and she's her best friend. But then I'm like, Shishu is pretty forgiving.
Shishu for goof goo, for goof goos. Oy vey. Well, listen, I could talk to you about this for as much time as the world would give me. But since we are on limited time, I need to ask you the famous podcast question, which leads us to your B of the LGBTQ. Lara, whose fault is it that you're bi? Who do we blame, babe?
Who do we blame? There could be a few people. I think you could blame my dad for... I honestly think you can kind of blame my dad for getting like a divorce from my mom and getting like a really hot girlfriend.
You're who kidding.
Was much younger than him.
You're kidding.
Who was like hot. Yeah.
I have never thought about a child of divorced parents dealing with their queerness and then a new, younger, hot person comes to date your parent. And that is a fraught relationship.
I think that that's like the first time that I was like, being queer, if I really think about it.
Hot for like, stepmommy.
A little bit. Or just being like, who is this woman? Like, I want to like, she wears thongs and like, she's like a Barbie doll. Like, it was an imprinted, it was a formative thing.
I'm not kidding. This is like hitting me so hard because it's not often that the idea of a awakening, a new idea, hits me so hard. I was so into adults as a child and I never thought mm-hmm. about the relationship of a new girlfriend or partner of a parent and what that would mean. Because while my parents had a tumultuous time for a spell, there were never any additional partners brought in. And to think about the fact, and my parents are still together and I give them so much credit for fighting through the fight. And like, that being said, if my mom brought in like a PE coach, honey, I would not need jackandworld.com. I would not need to rip videos off LimeWire. I would just insert depraved thing I would do to his underwear here.
Yeah. It's like in the house.
Did the girlfriend have any feeling that you were a little bit juicy over her?
Don't think so. I don't even think that I understood that that's what it was at the time.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I had also, I think by that time or around that time, had also been like kind of bullied at school by older girls who like called me a lesbian once. And like after I made like a joke during gym or something. And so that really like freaked me out. So then I feel like I was like ardently not gay in any way until like much later in life when I'm like, oh, I'm like bisexual, which also just took me a while to like figure out or understand.
What age was your dad dating this hot Barbie?
I met her, I think, when I was like 13 probably.
Damn.
And she was only 12 years older than I was, so she was like pretty young at the same time.
A 25
year old
hottie.
Dad's age. Yeah, she was 25. And
how long did they date?
They were dating, I think, for like 9 or 10 years total, maybe even like a little bit longer, because I think it was happening before the divorce and then might have happened like a little bit after my like troubled teen era. But I was like in therapeutic boarding school, so I don't know how long their relationship continued.
Good
after.
For you for therapeutic boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like a legit like, was it like a boarding school for bad kids vibes?
Yeah, it was like it was one of the boarding schools that Paris Hilton was sent to before she ended up at the like really, really bad one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I wasn't there at the same time as her, but it was like a therapeutic boarding school for troubled teens.
And was it, do you now look back and say it did good things for you, or was it a Paris Hilton trauma dump?
It was a little bit of both. Like it definitely was good in the sense that it got me out of where I was in life.
Yeah.
Like I needed to get away from all of my friends that I had was around at the time. I needed to get away from like doing a lot of drugs and drinking a lot.
Yeah.
But it also had its own set of challenges. Like, I mean, just the it's like a bunch of weird kind of hippie people who are not trained as psychologists. They're not mental health professionals, and they're doing all sorts of like unregulated therapy on you when you're in your teen years. And like, it's, I think, very unhealthy for a lot of teenagers to go through something like that at the hands of people who are not equipped to do those jobs.
That is what blows my mind the older I get, is how many decision makers there are for the health of teenagers that are not equipped to make those decisions. Do you know what I mean? Like, when I was in fucking high school, speaking of PE coaches, it's not the hot type, it's the asshole type. The stuff that he would say to like the people like me who were really struggling was so, the word I'm thinking of is caustic. Is that the right word? Like, really just like brutal. And this example I've given on this podcast before, it's been a while, but I was really insecure about my body and I would change in the stall.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, a few of us were doing it, I guess. And then he made a speech to say, if anybody is caught changing in the stall, he was going to like lower your grade by a letter to a bunch of like academically obsessed teenagers. Like, we were like, no, fuck, wait, that's please.
So weird.
Isn't it, though? And it's like, pedophilia notwithstanding, it's also like, what is wrong with you? Why do you care if we are trying to protect ourselves from the assholes we're in school with, including you, sir?
Yeah, or like, it's your body. You're allowed to like change or show it to whoever you want to show it to, or and guard it as you see fit.
Who am I hurting by putting on my Jewish sleepaway camp slogan shirt in the stall and then emerging and being bad at dodgeball? Like, who am I hurting by doing that?
Yeah, that's really bizarre.
So the fact that you were at this school, which I'm sure I'm happy that some of it was good, but then of course, like, when you think about these non
it's really weird too. And it goes back, even back to like the gay stuff, like we weren't allowed to have like romantic relationships there. Like, it was very strict about like, but in terms of like girls and boys are not allowed to like pursue each other romantically, which like, good fucking luck telling that to like teenagers at a boarding school. Like, you're setting everyone up to fail, but like, so you'd get in a lot of trouble if you like talk to a guy too much. They would put you on band, so you couldn't talk to each other. If you got caught sneaking around talking to each other, you'd get dishes and get like punishments. If you held hands or had any sort of physical contact, they called it a sex contract. Ooh. And then you would also get punished for that. And then they were, and that's all just like with the straight sex that was happening. But like, any time that someone was like found out as having any sort of gay sex, like, there were a couple guys who were like out as gay teenagers, but like, there were a handful of people that were still, I guess, like figuring it out or not necessarily identifying as any specific way, but would get caught in these like same sex like hookups, and those were treated like so, made such a huge deal out of it, and it was like so shameful. And like, I think that just got coded into me too as being like, oh my god, this is a no-fly zone.
You're
like
constantly told how horrible. I mean, the fact that the girls in your school before boarding school were like calling you gay, and that was such a, it pinged really high for you, and then the code red of boarding school, it's so fucked up. And that's, I had a moment today, and you're affirming this. I was driving from Trader Joe's, and I'm feeling like I have a lot of highs and lows right now. And we just released the tickets for the New York live show. That's a big deal for me because I haven't done this live show yet there, and I'm excited. But then I was having a moment of depression of just like, couldn't even explain why. I was feeling a little low. And then I, on the drive, I was like reminding myself why this has been good for me and exciting is because it is rebelling against those types of messages. And even you saying that is another sign from the universe of like, how fucked up was it that there was such an alarm bell rung when any sign pointed to you being who you were?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I assume then you did not have any girl moments because you were so afraid of that, right? In boarding school?
Oh, yeah. There were no girl-girl moments there. And then I think it just took a long time. Or I feel like actually there was one night where some of my friends snuck booze on campus. And it was like we got drunk in the like proctor dorm, like me and the dorm proctor and my best friend Jocelyn. And I think in those moments I was like, we should all make out. Like that's like when my like gayness would come out, is like drunk and being like comfortable be like trying something. But even into adulthood has just been like, I've dated a woman like very briefly, but it still is like something that I think I reckon with a lot.
Yeah.
Just feeling like comfortable and like activated and asking myself like, what, like, I don't know, it's hard to decide. I'm like, bisexuality is like a struggle sometimes because you're like, oh, how bi am I? Like, do I have equal interest in both genders, or am I like more leaning towards this way? Or if I lean towards this way, does that take this off the table completely? And then that feels like scary to me.
Well, and it also, I think, really supports the idea of people who come out later in life as any type of queer, of having to relearn what your actual impulses are. Because if your impulses are told that they're bad for the first however many years or decades of your life, you're going to second guess and question so much of those impulses. So then it becomes like, and I think that's why a lot of us, like me included, in my 30s, is having this renaissance of like, I'm proudly putting on the internet when I'm turned on by another guy or like attracted to someone. And like, I get messages of like, is your husband fine with this? I'm like, yeah, he's fine with it. He like, cause he is thirsting over a pottery fag who lives in Australia and he should have that right. So like, I just want to validate, like, of course, I'm sure. And also bisexuality is another complication because there's a lot of different types of people. At least I'm like,
there's a lot.
Give me a mustache, either a bald head or not. Give me a happy trail. And honey,
we're in business.
The answer has been given. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, probably I'm like even more like pansexual than anything because I'm just like open. Like, I wouldn't limit it to just like a cisgender male or cisgender female. But that's like kind of what I think I buy is encompassing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to get into like all the other things that one
there's a lot of
be.
Things and there's a lot of things.
There's so many things. Yeah. That list gets longer and longer every day. And I kind of do love to look through on dating apps when it's like, how do you identify? And then you can just scroll and scroll and scroll.
Yeah, I was talking, well, take two. I was flirting with someone at a party recently who we got into this conversation about like what we're into. And he said that he was a demisexual. And I was like, go off. Let's dig in and find out what that means more for you. And I think that like it's, I think the list is getting longer because people are like we're saying, realizing more of what speaks to them. And so we're labeling it more. But like, I can only imagine dating apps in a decade. It's going to look very different.
Yeah. I feel like I don't like labeling anything because it feels really restrictive to me. But I do like, in Sex and the City, when Samantha Jones said, I'm a trisexual, I'll try anything once. Oh. I was like, I feel that.
Did you want to fuck Samantha when you were watching her growing up?
I really liked seeing all their tits on the show. Like, I really liked it.
Remember the episode when they
topless?
Throw the honeydew melons into the...
I loved that.
Yeah.
Anytime that you could see boobs on Sex and the City, I was loving it. And I always was like hoping to get a glimpse of Carrie's because she is a great rack. But
apparently contractually...
She was a little bit more conservative about showing off the goods. But like... the episode where Charlotte had to like tell Trey, like, I'm a woman and I have feeling, like, and she's kind of in that negligee. Like, I was just always horny for boobs on TV.
Did you like Miranda's boobs?
Yeah, I liked everyone's boobs. I was really like, even at like sleepovers when I was young, like when we'd like watch porn or something, and it would always be like a softcore porn, like with Shannon Tweed. And it was like, I think those are the first boobs that I saw. Like,
you immediately teleported me back to the softcore videos, because I remember seeing really bronzed tits. I remember seeing like really like,
they're really round.
Yeah.
And like big. And hard.
Yeah.
It was like the 90s boobs.
The 90s boobs were hard. I also remember Miranda having a really, a strong nipple game on Miranda.
Yeah, good nipple, like the tone of her skin, like very creamy.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
kind of fair with like a pink nipple. It was hot.
Kind of like a Renaissance vibe.
Yeah. I was like, these are hot women and I enjoy seeing them having sex. And it is sexy. It's Sex in the City.
And that is our commercial for Max.
Make sure you tune in
to the May 23rd.
Is that the date?
Yeah. I'm like, literally, they do have a kind of Sheena sounding voice, like announcing Max. Like, I was watching Succession last night, and at the end of it, it was like, showed the trailer for the finale, and then it was like, only on Max. May 23rd.
Because we're HBO Max.
She just makes Good as Gold go for Uber.
They HBO. Should have her, like, I need like Good as Gold to get option for like an Amazon commercial or something. Like,
because
if I was fucking Bezos, yeah, I would tell him that it's time to give Sheena
Nike
pay
because
her.
Because you're just doing it.
What other brands can we do? Chick-fil-A?
Anything. Because we're closed on Sunday.
Oh my God. The writer's room is buzzing right now. And I know we're not supposed to, but God, that was good.
I know. Are we scabs for that?
We're scab vibes. What about Bed Bath & Beyond?
Because we're liquidating our inventory.
Because we're bankrupt. Good, not good as gold.
Because we're not good as gold.
I would love for it to become like the biggest song in the world. It feels like right.
And then we find out that Countess Luann has engaged in self-harm because she's so devastated, which I don't wish on her or anyone.
They should go on tour together.
And I would go for Sheena, not for Countess. I've gone on record. The cabaret, I think, is a federal offense.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's not good. I need to ask you another podcast question because I haven't yet fulfilled my contractual obligations by saying, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
Oh my God. One character actress and that's it. I'm going to go with Rosanna Arquette.
Oh, a first. I'm giving a round of applause because when a guest says a character actress who has not been referenced, they get applause. Can you give me the elevator pitch as to why she popped up into your head and why did she speak to you?
She really... Like, Pulp Fiction was one of my favorite movies growing up, and I was, like, really influenced by her character mm-hmm. in that. And I just think she's really cool and underrated, and I like her vibe.
Are you attracted to her? I don't mean to ask the gross questions, but I'm curious.
I'm not attracted to her. I'm attracted to her, yeah, like her energy and just like her look. And I think she's cool. And I also wanted to choose someone that was like niche that probably wasn't like shouted out. And she popped into my head and I was like, her, she gets it.
And by the way, you nailed that answer because I'm looking at her filmography too. And just like it, there's a picture of her with blue hair on a red carpet, which we support. She's done Pulp Fiction, Desperately Seeking Susan, the whole nine yards. I mean, it's giving, it's the L word. She was on one episode in the new the Generation Q one that happened. I mean, she clearly likes our people and is one of us. And I applaud you for giving that answer. And I thank you for that.
Yeah. And she's just like, cool.
She just reminded me of an in-law of mine. My husband has like a great aunt who showed up to our wedding. She's like a very southern, I would say quite conservative based on her Facebook. And she showed up with dyed hair. I think it was some sort of like purpley moment. And
I love it when the ladies go like in a different hair color and like a older age.
Yes.
Yeah.
And can you just imagine this woman in her bathroom, knowing that she's about to be at a gay wedding, probably for the first and only time in her life. And she said to herself, I'm going to drag out the blue for the dolls, and I'm going to make a statement, and I'm going to enter this gay wedding, and they're not going to gloss past me. They're not going to say she's just an old woman here. They're going to say that she is fabulous, and she really knows how to dance to the lesbian DJ. And I think she did that, and I want to give her those props and thank her for
that. And she served a look.
She served a look at her great nephew's gay Jewish wedding.
Cool.
Oh my God. What a sweetie. And by the way, you've been such an amazing guest this week, and I'm so thrilled that this happened. But before we have to close this out, I need to ask you the final podcast question I did not prep you on, which is, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh, Sister Act 1 and 2 by far.
Snaps, snaps, and snaps. A perfect answer after perfect answer. My favorite of all time is 2, and you have mentioned it, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, I think I watched 2. I want to say, I actually don't know what order. I probably did actually watch them in order, but God, the 90s were so good, and it's a very rare occurrence when the sequel is better than the original. And then that happened time after time in the 90s. Like, Wayne's World 2 is better than Wayne's World 1.
Great ref.
There's even, like, another sequel. It's escaping me now. But, like, that was, like, a recurring theme.
Oh, yeah. It was much more prevalent then to improve upon the original, whereas now we get alarm bells because we're worried about whether... And by the way... I don't know if it's still happening because, again, I have trust issues with a good thing. But, like, Sister Act 3 apparently was going to go into production or something. And, like, I can only hope that it's just not.
Be amazing.
Oh, God. But I can't wait for.
It's scary. Yeah.
It's scary. I'm scared. And I'm scared. And I feel safe saying that in front of you. And I want to thank you again for coming on this Gay Ass Podcast. Laura, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram and TikTok. Sometimes I'm on TikTok at Lars Marie. And listen to Sexy Unique Podcast. Listen to my other podcast, Too Niche. And you can also listen to my passion project, Saving Sex in the City 3.
I've listened. I'm a fan. And I'm so glad you plugged because people absolutely should.
Thanks. It's one of my favorite things that I do, and it truly is just like for the lols. So, yeah. And that's coming back. I'm recording episodes now for like a new season of that. So
hell
keep
yeah.
An eye out for that.
Well, here's to following the lols and being the bi badass bitch you are, and to hopefully you coming back on this podcast again in the near future. And I'm such a fan. So thank you.
Thank you. The feelings are mutual.
If you enjoyed this Gay Ass Podcast, you've not left a 5-star review, I would love for that to happen. I just want to read one that I just got a few days ago. It says, this podcast gives me cozy feels like Ina Garten does. God, to be in the same breath as that fucking queen. A dream on this Wednesday. Leave your own review for 5 stars if you wish, and get those tickets to the live shows, June 15th in LA, June 29th in New York. And if you liked last week's episode with Joe Hedges from Good Children Podcast, Joe and Andrew are both going to be on the lineup for that New York show as well. God, it's all happening. I'll see you next week for a special surprise, and I'll see you IRL next month. Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.